Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the EWI Podcast, a platform where we explore some of today's key global issues with leading thinkers and analysts. My name is Franz Stefangadi, and I'm a senior fellow with the East-West Institute. Today, I have the pleasure of welcoming an expert on European and, in particular, German defense policy, Dr. Ulrike Franke. Ulrike, welcome to the EWI Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Ulrike is a policy fellow at the European Council on Foreign Relations and its new European Security Initiative. She works on German and European security and defense, the future of warfare, and the impact of new technologies such as drones and artificial intelligence. Ulrike also recently testified in front of the British House of Lords International Relations Committee on the impact of new technology on warfare. She's also the author of a recent article about Germany's security and defense policy, which is also going to be the starting point for our conversation today. Ulrike, the article you wrote for the East-West Institute examines an important debate that has been taking place over the summer, dealing with the question as to whether Germany should attain its own nuclear capability. So, to be blunt, is Germany really considering becoming a nuclear power?
No, it really isn't. I mean, this is a point that is very important to make straight away, which is that Germany will not get a nuclear weapon. And I'm saying this because this whole debate about a potential German nuclear bomb has taken off quite a lot. I mean, this started about a year ago, even a bit more. It started when Donald Trump was elected as U.S. president, and that was the time when the first commentators in Germany started to say, well, the world is changing here, and maybe Germany needs to reconsider its situation in the world and its defense capabilities. And a few commentators made this proposition that maybe Germany should get a nuclear weapon. And this summer, during this summer's silly season, if you like, this debate has come back. Now, in general, I think it's good that Germany is starting to discuss such issues more. But no, to answer your question, Germany is not just unlikely to get a bomb, but really, I don't think it's in any way possible that Germany will get a nuclear weapon, because it would mean, you know, leaving the NPT treaty, the non-proliferation treaty. It would go against anything that Germany believes in. But that being said, there is an argument to be made that, you know, maybe Europe, either the European Union or, you know, several European states need to consider whether they want some kind of European nuclear capability or not.
That's a really good point to follow up on that question when you mentioned just now this European nuclear capability, what experts call Euro deterrent. Could you perhaps elaborate a little bit on that? I can immediately foresee a couple of issues with that whole issue as well. Do you think these debates are happening in conjunction, or are these two separate debates to be had? Germany on the one hand, and then Europe as a whole on the other?
Well, I would say that these debates should be happening together, or rather we should have a debate about a European nuclear capability and not about a German nuclear capability. So in a way, I want to have the second debate, but not the first one. So you are absolutely right that there are some issues. So to give you some background, within Europe and within the European Union, there are two states that have nuclear weapons, right? France and the United Kingdom. Both of them don't have, you know, that many nuclear weapons. The UK has the so-called Trident, so mainly submarine-based nuclear weapons, similar in France. And both of these countries see their nuclear capabilities as, you know, national capabilities, in particular France more so than the UK, but still. That being said, I think at least the British nuclear weapons are considered part of the NATO nuclear deterrent, so they're already, you know, within or under this umbrella, if you like, even though that still means that it's only the UK that you know, can use those. And the French ones, at least theoretically, are, you know, under the EU defense umbrella, because there is a clause in the Lisbon Treaty about European defense within the EU, and in theory that could also include France's nuclear weapons. But that being said, at this point, these are very much national capabilities, and there is no provision to share these in any way. But the reason why I'm saying it's worth having this discussion is that, you know, there's this whole debate at the moment that Europe, whether it's the EU or, you know, European states, need to be able to do more by themselves. The buzzword here is European strategic autonomy. which is something that has been mentioned in the EU global strategy and by a number of other players.
Well, that's very interesting that you mentioned the word strategic autonomy here. Perhaps for the benefit of our audience, what specifically is strategic autonomy? And is it a goal worthwhile pursuing for German and European policymakers?
Well, that's exactly the problem, because no one knows what strategic autonomy is, or rather, European strategic autonomy is what Europe wants it to be. So the term itself appears most prominently in the EU global strategy, so the kind of, you know, white book or whatever you want to call it, the big strategic document by the European Union from last year, 2016, something like that. But it's never really particularly well defined, namely because it's not entirely clear what it means. The idea behind it is that because, you know, the United States is increasingly withdrawing from the international scene, and of course there is, you know, the presidency of Donald Trump, Europeans are realizing that they need to be able to do more in defense and security by themselves. We're not talking strategic independence here. So this isn't about saying we don't need the US anymore or the North Atlantic Alliance isn't working anymore. It's just saying that, you know, given that there are some 500 million Europeans, they should be able to do more things on their own and by themselves. And this whole debate about the European nuclear weapon or, you know, the new European atomic bomb is very much part of that. Now, personally, I wouldn't go there first. For me, you know, the atomic bomb is kind of one of the later topics I would be talking about. I don't think that that's kind of the most important issue at the moment, because there is still NATO and there are some European states that have nuclear capabilities. But I'm nevertheless quite happy that we are at least having these strategic debates, because it is very important that Europe thinks about what does it want to be able to do by itself? What kind of operations do Europeans want to be able to do by themselves without the support of the US? And what kind of things do European countries want to do together? I mean, this is very much a kind of European Union / the future of the European Union after Brexit question, because there is this question of what should we be able to do together? What kind of capabilities should Europe have? What kind of capabilities should the national states in Europe have? And so this is why this whole debate about the nuclear weapon makes some sense to me, even though I wouldn't have started it before talking about other capabilities, really.
Well, let me ask you, what kind of capabilities do you think Europe or the European Union needs in the 21st century?
So first of all, there is a question of, is it Europe or is it the European Union? And this is really a problem, because it would be easier to do things within the European Union, and we're already seeing several projects there. The Permanent Structured Cooperation, or PESCO, is one. There are a few projects that have happened recently. But these are EU projects. And of course, the big problem is that although most of Europe is part of the EU, some European countries are not part of the EU. And most prominently, we have the UK or Great Britain leaving the EU in March next year, and that is a problem, because the UK is a you know, relatively important military power. So what should Europe or the EU be able to do? I mean, in my view, for too long, Europe, and in particularly Germany, have relied on the support and, you know, the protection of the United States. So this idea of the kind of post-Cold War peace dividend is something that especially Germany very much believed in, and it decreased its defense spending quite dramatically, and the Bundeswehr, the German armed forces, suffered because of it. So at this point, I would almost say that we need to improve almost all military capabilities. So really, like, kind of throughout Europe and throughout all capabilities, we need to do more. This also means spending more, but it also means coordinating better and working better together. And we have people such as the French President Emmanuel Macron, who are very much thinking along these lines, and he has proposed the European Intervention Initiative, which sounds like something that is calling militaries to action, but at this point it's more like a European military Erasmus, so a kind of exchange between different European militaries. But that makes a lot of sense because that's all part of, you know, having more exchange, making sure that things are compatible, that European militaries are on the same page, that they are interoperable to some extent. So that's the first. So my answer to your question is basically we need to do more almost everywhere. But that being said, there are a few things that make sense to do sooner rather than later. One is what we call the military Schengen. That's the idea of European militaries being able to move without many problems between countries for military exercises, and then, you know, potentially if there ever is a conflict. That has been problematic in the past, and we need to improve that. Another element is cyber. So now we're kind of leaving the classic hard military areas, but cyber, our recent research has shown, is one of the things where most Europeans are really concerned about. And that is, in my view, an area where the European Union can work together to make Europe more resilient, more capable to withstand attack, more aware really of the danger. But yeah, in a way we almost need to do more almost everywhere. So that's the situation in Europe in my view.
I want to perhaps move on from the debate about capabilities, because I think there's another component to this whole debate that perhaps is often underappreciated, and that's the whole political dimension to an increase in defense spending in Europe. Because I think one of the major problems that in my mind pops up is, how do you convince policymakers in Europe and politicians in Europe that they need to be spending more on defense? Of course, on the one hand, you have the global threat environment that has significantly changed over the last couple of years, but I'm still missing a sort of narrative. Can you perhaps help us out here? What do you think should be the European narrative to perhaps, for the lack of a better word, convince policymakers to spend more money or to focus more on military capabilities in Europe?
Well, actually, I don't think that's that difficult, simply because we have seen an increase in European defense spending basically since 2014. So despite what President Trump keeps saying, namely that, you know, European NATO countries aren't spending enough, and only because of him they're now starting to spend more, that's not actually true. European countries have started to increase their defense spending since 2014. And of course, the reason for why this year is that it's related to a resurgent Russia and Russia's action in Crimea and Ukraine. So in a way, that's already part of the narrative, namely that in Europe's immediate neighborhood, we now have actors that are quite actively undermining the European security architecture, are actively trying to, you know, break the European Union apart and saw problems between Europeans. So Russia is really one part of the narrative, in my view. The other part of the narrative that I would offer is indeed the United States, including but not exclusively with regard to Trump. So the election of Donald Trump really has changed quite a lot in Europe. Many, many countries are worried about where the U.S. is headed. And a lot of this is Trump. So there is some hope that once there is another president, maybe, you know, the U.S. may come back to NATO more, may believe more in alliances again. But that being said, there is indeed fundamental imbalance between the US and Europe when it comes to security and defense. So within NATO, the US does spend most of the defense spending when you look at all the NATO countries together. And there is some historical reason for it, and some of it makes sense, and some of, you know, this imbalance is simply due to the US basically overspending. But all of that being said, it doesn't make sense forever and ever. So Europe needs to be prepared for the future, for a 21st century in which the U.S. may not be willing to always be there as the umbrella power that is willing to step up if there's something happening in Europe. So for me, it's really, you know, the threat environment, as you mentioned it, but in particular, Russia and increasing threats all over the world, really. And the other thing is the relationship with the U.S. that is changing and is going to change even, you know, beyond Donald Trump.
Well, also tied to this whole debate here is, I think, another question that probably needs to be asked in this context, and that is really the question about specifically national interests or what European interests are in the world, because I think they're specifically tied to military capabilities and also to political will, right? I wonder whether we want to briefly touch on this subject. What do you think really Europe's global interests are? Are they in line with the United States, and where do they clash with the United States as its most important ally? And is this a debate that you think is happening currently in Europe, or is this a debate that should be actually happening?
In my view, that is the most important question, and it is a debate that is not happening sufficiently. So what you are basically asking is, what should Europe be able to do? What is it actually, what does it want to do in the world? What kind of capabilities does it need for these kind of, you know, operations or roles? And it's not entirely clear yet, I'd say, both, you know, within Europe more broadly, but also within the European Union. So I think I would see it the following way. Europe or the EU is not going to or does not want to replace the US in any way, right? I mean, if the US is really withdrawing from the world stage, as it, you know, sometimes looks these days, so basically abandoning this role of superpower, the role of, you know, world police, if you like to call it that way, the EU is not going to fill that void. That's just not what the EU does, what European countries want to do or can do. That being said, Europe still needs to be able to, number one, defend itself against attacks and against the most likely attacks. And number two, I would say Europe needs to be able to intervene at least in its immediate neighborhood if things go wrong there. So if there are conflicts in the immediate neighborhood, whether it's, you know, North Africa or you know, in the Near East or more to the east of Europe, the EU or Europe should be able to possibly intervene to help with conflict situations, to help avoid situations where you have large numbers of migrants coming to Europe. So these are major interests of Europe that either EU or Europeans should be able to avoid.
So what's Germany's interest in all of this? Recently, the German foreign minister, Heiko Maas, when talking about the German national interest, said, I quote, "There's a name for Germany's national interest, Europe." And then also a couple of weeks ago, he gave a very important speech, a very interesting speech, rather, where he said that he is trying to forge or spearhead an alliance for multilateralism. Can you perhaps contextualize this? Germany is such an important actor, and I often find that perhaps because of certain discrepancies within the German political discourse, perhaps this also spills over to other parts of Europe, where there's just a general confusion about really this whole idea of national interest. But what are your thoughts on Germany's role in all of this?
Yeah, I think you got a few very good quotes there, because the official line in German politics for, well, as long as I can remember, really, so for the last decades, has always been that Germany doesn't have national interests. Europe's interests are Germany's interests. And it's quite a strong thing to say, right? I mean, France or Great Britain or, you know, even smaller European Union member states would never say it in that way. But the line for Germany has always been that, you know, Germany is part of Europe and Europe is really what counts. So that's quite important, and that's still the official line, really. That being said, Germany is not necessarily willing to deliver on that. I mean, it's quite striking. Ever since 2014, again, 2014 is really an important date here, not just for Europe, but also for Germany. But, you know, 2014 was the year in which Germany stepped up, or at least that was the rhetoric. You had a bunch of speeches from very high-level politicians at places such as the Munich Security Conference and elsewhere, where they basically said, okay, we have realized that, you know, the world's becoming a dangerous place. We are not in this peaceful world in which Germany can just, you know, be happy and trade with the world, so we need to do more, and we're willing to do more. And overall, Europe, you know, really welcomed that. The problem is that since 2014, honestly, not that much has happened in Germany itself. It almost seems as if, you know, oh, we've said the right thing, now we can go back to do what we've done before. I mean, defense spending is increasing somewhat, but, you know, Germany is far from the 2% of GDP defense spending that it is aiming at, supposedly, because of NATO, we are at 1.2% at this point, and we are now hoping to reach 1.5% by 2025, and even that's not for sure. So Germany isn't really putting that much money behind what it has been saying, and that has, you know, started to cause problems with other European countries, because they say, well, you know, you say all these nice things, but then you don't necessarily do them. So that is a problem. Overall, I mean, yes, of course, Germany is incredibly important within Europe, but there are also other important countries, and one that is currently extremely important, of course, is France. And France is getting more important by the minute, if you like, because of Brexit, because the UK is leaving, and because, you know, Germany isn't really doing what it promised to do, isn't really stepping up as much, and because France has this, you know, very pro-European leader, Emmanuel Macron, who is very much pushing this topic forward. As I mentioned earlier, he has proposed the European Intervention Initiative, and he's really trying to make Europe happen, make European defense happen, push all of this forward. And in a way, I mean, personally, I have been a bit disappointed that he hasn't really received the kind of positive answer from Germany that I would have hoped for and honestly was kind of expecting.
Can you give some concrete examples here, just to expand on this really interesting point?
So when Emmanuel Macron came into power, he had this, you know, very long and important speech at the Sorbonne University, and he proposed many things, and he basically, you know, said Europe is the future and we need to build on that. And he made a few, you know, more concrete proposals, such as the European Intervention Initiative and a few more, you know, broader ideas. And it was at this point that I was kind of hoping for Germany to, you know, take the hand that would extend it towards it and say, okay, you know, we very much agree, as I said, Europeans' interests or Germany's interests, let's do this together. And the problem was that at that time, when all of this was happening, Germany was either, you know, was kind of in the election period, so in the pre-election period, and then it had these 6 months during which there were coalition talks, and Germany did only have an interim government. And so there was a lot of time lost in between, and then we had a new government, which turned out to be the old government. But they also, I mean, they said a lot of nice things about Europe, but then didn't really do that much. I mean, there was a whole debate about Eurozone reform questions that aren't really relevant for us. But basically, Germany put a damper on most things and didn't really seem to share the enthusiasm for the EU that Emmanuel Macron was bringing to the table, which I think is an opportunity lost. As you mentioned, we now have the new foreign minister, Heiko Maas, who, you know, has been making a few speeches, and he had a very recently had a piece in the Handelsblatt where he laid out his kind of future strategy, but that had one paragraph on, you know, issues of defense and security. It really wasn't strong on that.
Well, we're coming to the end of our time here. Moving forward, what key things should our audience be looking for when it comes to Germany and its role in European and global security in the near future? And as a follow-on to that question, will we see a more proactive interventionist Germany in the near future? A Germany more ready to use force? From what I've heard, perhaps you have some doubts about that, but I would really like to get your perspective.
So there's two things I would be looking out for, or let's say three things I would be looking out for. The first thing is rhetoric. I mean, yes, you know, talking is cheap, everyone knows that, and yes, it's kind of important to see what Heiko Maas, what Angela Merkel, what whoever comes after Angela Merkel, what they say. So that's the first thing, and, you know, we are seeing some change there. The second is defense spending, and maybe not just defense spending, but also development spending, you know, any kind of spending that goes into foreign policy, security, and defense policy. I think that's important. And we have seen some changes there, and we have a defense minister who has been trying to get more money for the military. So there are some changes there as well. But yeah, that's something to keep an eye on. And then the third is indeed this question of intervention. Is Germany willing to do more? And kind of unbeknownst to many, or, you know, in a way that not many are talking about, Germany is now quite active in Mali. I mean, There are about 1,500 soldiers now in Mali. There are, you know, drones and other military equipment based there. This has become the biggest military operation for Germany, even before Afghanistan, where there, I think there are like 1,000 German soldiers left there. So these are operations that we may want to keep an eye on, and yeah, any kind of future operations. At this point, you know, we don't really know what the future is going to bring, but I think that would be an important signal if Germany was to do more in military operations, in interventions or operations elsewhere, and especially the kind of commitment that Germany would be willing to make. Because Germany is always very good at saying, we'll help finance operations, or we'll send reconnaissance means. We do things like that, but there is very little willingness to do real military operations, to go into areas where it's really dangerous.
I think it's also really interesting, considering that we are talking about Germany and thinking about German history here, what do you think the perception will be by German neighbors about a more proactive Germany when it comes to defense in general?
So I do believe that this idea that Europeans are still fearing a strong Germany are exaggerated or even wrong. Our research, or my research, really suggests that overall European countries want Germany to step up, want Germany to do more, including in security and defense. That does not include the German nuclear bomb that we talked about at the beginning of this podcast. It has been very clear from my conversations on Twitter and elsewhere that most European countries would not be happy with a nuclear-armed Germany. But again, that's not going to happen anyway, and there's no one really pushing for that. But a more capable Germany, a Germany with more military capabilities and means, and the willingness to use those military means if needed to avoid crises, to intervene in crises, things like that. In my view, that is something that Europe would definitely welcome, and I really don't see anyone who's really criticizing a move towards more German military capabilities.
Well, thank you for this very insightful answer that not a lot of people have been considering. And that's a perfect point for concluding our podcast. Before we close the show, however, I'd like to thank again Dr. Ulrike Franke for joining us and sharing her insights in European and German defense security policies and what that means for the region, the West, and the rest of the world. Ulrike, thank you for joining us.
Well, thanks a lot for having me.
Remember to look for EWI Podcast on our website, SoundCloud, and iTunes under the name of East West Institute, where you can listen, follow, and subscribe so you won't miss our conversations.